Let me introduce the presenters today. We have three Milliman actuarial consultants in the room. Lorraine Main is with our Salt Lake City, Utah office. Gary Brace is from Atlanta, Georgia, and Jack Burke from Philadelphia. And to begin things, I'd like to turn it over to Lorraine Main. Lorraine?
Thank you very much, Jim. We are very pleased to be presenting the results of our 2007 research because we think we do have some pretty interesting findings this year that we're anxious to share with you. First of all, the cost trends are lower this year than they have been previously with the Milliman Medical Index. That is, in particular, the pharmacy area of costs are down for the second year in a row. In fact, the only major category of care with a lower trend this year than pharmacy is physician services. And that's quite a change from just 2 years ago when pharmacy costs were one of the fastest growing areas of the index. In addition to the national index, we also determine estimates for 7 selected metropolitan areas across the country. And from lowest to highest, we saw more than a 25% difference between those different areas that we looked at. We think this could have implications for healthcare reform proposals that utilize a fixed standard deduction such as that's part of the president's proposal. Finally, we observed this year that employees were bearing a larger portion of the increase in cost. We're going to provide some additional detail about each of these findings and then take some time to answer your questions towards the end. As Jim mentioned, the Milliman Medical Index, or as we will call it index or MMI for short, is the total cost to deliver care to a typical American family of four. It differs somewhat from some other surveys that you will see that track the increase in insurance premiums. The Milliman Medical Index tracks the total cost, whether that's paid by the employer-provided plan or out-of-pocket by the employee. So it's a little bit different measure of that total cost. For 2007, the index is $14,500. Compared to last year's index of $13,382, that's an increase of $1,118. That increase, while it is significant, it's actually $51 less than last year's increase. And in fact, this year's change at 8.4% represents the lowest percent increase over the period covered by the Milliman Medical Index and is a decrease from last year's change of 9.6%. Gary is now going to talk a little bit about some of the components that contribute to that.
Well, thank you, Lorraine. As Lorraine mentioned, the overall trend rate is the lowest we've seen in the last 4 years of our study. And while the overall trends have been somewhat stable in total, as you might expect, there's a little variation among the various service categories. We did notice in our study that during the first 2 years of our study period, the pharmacy and inpatient costs were the highest. Then in the last 2 years, pharmacy trends have dropped. That's mainly driven by the use of generic drugs substituting for the more expensive brand drugs. Not only are there more generic drugs available for substitution, but there's an increase in the utilization of those generic drugs. And secondly, there's also a lot of drugs that have come off patent. I think we all know Zoloft, Zocor, among others, that have come off patent that people are able to get now over the counter, which also leads to a decrease in cost. But we don't expect this continuing trend in the in pharmacy. We think that there's going to be an increased use of specialty drugs, a lot of self-injectables and biologics, and also an increase in unit costs of specialty drugs. So we'll probably see pharmacy trends come up a little higher than what they are now. And moving to the next slide, we have a graphical representation of the variation in the trend rates by major service category. And while, as I mentioned earlier, the overall trend rates have been somewhat stable over the last 4 years. There is a variation among the different service categories on a year-to-year basis. And one thing that's unique about this year, and kind of an exception from previous years, is that there's not really one strong driver that sort of dominates the landscape of the medical trends. As I mentioned, inpatient was high in our first year of our study. Pharmacy was high in the first 2 years, but now there's not one that really sticks out. It tends to be, you know, maybe a little bit of a compression, if you will, in the medical costs, centered around that average. Our study also looked at the variation in costs by geographic area across the country, and we picked 7 cities nationwide purposely to show the range of healthcare costs. And we picked those cities based on maybe the business climate in that area as well as different healthcare costs. And the costs varied by over 25%. They went from Seattle with a low of $13,206 to New York with $16,542. And these differences are driven by a number of factors. I think we'd all probably agree that there's a difference in the general cost between business in different areas. Certainly labor costs vary. There's different regulations regarding hospital staffing levels and the cost to develop various institutional resources, competitive differences, and then also the variations in the medical treatment patterns performed by the various medical professionals in these different areas. But with that, I'll turn it back over to Lorraine.
Over the past several years, we have seen employers shielding their employees for much of the increase in cost. In fact, on average, over the last 3 years, employers have borne more than 70% of the increase in cost, passing just 30% of that on to employees. Since the employer share of cost is approximately 60%, this meant that employees were gradually decreasing their share of the amount that they were paying. As described earlier, trends moderated for 2007, but a larger portion of that cost in this year was borne by employees. In fact, nearly half of the dollar change for 2007 was borne by employees. To understand the employee share in cost, we look separately at the two ways that employees share in the cost of their care. We'll talk first about the amounts that consumers pay out of pocket at time of service. This can take the form of deductibles, coinsurance, copayments. The percent of total cost paid through out-of-pocket cost sharing had gradually decreased from about 17.3% in 2003 to 16.5% in 2006. We saw that rebound a little bit in 2007 up to 16.7%. You can also see on this slide how out-of-pocket cost sharing varies by the different components of care and how that has changed over time. For example, you'll notice that the percent cost sharing for physician services has been gradually decreasing over this period, and that's because copayments have not increased as quickly as the cost of physician services have increased. Pharmacy care, you'll notice in particular, shows the pattern of being the category with the highest percent cost sharing for consumers, and is actually at 24.5% for 2007. It is worth noting that most benefit plans are structured so that consumers can reduce their out-of-pocket cost sharing by selecting generic drugs or formulary drugs where that's appropriate for their care. Now, even though consumers bear a large percent of the pharmacy cost, the total for pharmacy is only about 14% of overall cost. So if we look next at the actual dollar cost sharing by component, we see that pharmacy is not the largest portion that is paid out of pocket. In fact, physician services are about 35% of the total. The total dollar increase,
The total dollar increase in out-of-pocket cost sharing for the our typical family of four was $210, moving from 2,310 in 2006 up to 2,420 in 2007. We'll look next at employees' contribution towards their premium. This is the second way in which employees share a portion of their health care costs through a payroll deduction contributing to their premium. And since 2003, we've seen the portion of premiums paid by employees gradually decrease. But in 2007, that increased again somewhat. So in combination, these two types of cost sharing contribute to the pattern we'll see in the next slide. Of the total increase in medical costs during the period from 2003 to 2006, where trends were in the 9 to 10% range, the employee share of that cost increase was between 5 to 8%. As employers pick up the remaining portion, they had a trend increase over 3% each of those years, but in 2007, there was a reversal, which we think is catch up, so that employees were bearing a larger percent increase and the employer share was 6.5%. We think that what has led to this pattern is, as you're in a period of high trends or increasing trends, employers are hesitant to pass on all of that trend increase to employees, because they want to keep an attractive benefit package to attract and maintain a productive workforce. As the trends have moderated, there's been some catch-up towards the ultimate percent cost sharing that employees are targeting somewhat on that as well. So those are the principal findings from our research. We're happy at this point to answer questions that you may have and expand on any of these points further.
Sure. Somewhere, but just what was the resource base for the study? Who was surveyed?
Just to repeat the question, you're asking what was the resource base for the Milliman Medical Index?
It's not a survey. It's a compilation of data. Milliman collects data from a variety of sources, external purchase databases, and data contributed by clients and customers. And so it's a build up. It's a build of healthcare costs from the bottom up. Some of the cost sharing. The report, the index report, does describe there's some of the elements about cost sharing come from the Kaiser Family Foundation survey, and then a third element, the benefit, and the benefit costs come from some internal data as well as some external published data, such as Kaiser Family Foundation.
Yes, Kim.
Well, how much of the difference from state to state can be attributed to different state laws and mandates and things like that? And on the individual side, that accounts for a huge difference. On the group side, not quite as much. But is some of this because of state regulation?
Well, one interesting thing about the Milliman Medical Index is that we're measuring the cost for each of these areas on a specific benefit plan. So certain benefit mandates are taken out of that difference. And I think there's other areas where regulations could affect the overall practice patterns. Gary can address that.
Certainly, what Lorraine says is true, is that we used a benefit plan that did not include some of the specific mandated benefits. some of the difference in regulations, there'll be hospital staffing ratios that vary. For instance, California has a hospital staffing ratio that says hospital has to have so many nurses per employee, which naturally is going to boost up the cost. There's other regulations, certificate of need regulations that exist across the country that may differ in terms of how many institutional resources like a nursing home or an MRI center that will be allowed to be built in a certain region, you know, the density of those. And those certainly affect the utilization of those type of resources.
And this is a combination of all case sizes, self-funded and insured. And so some of the mandated benefits you talk about would explain differences between the large self-funded, which may avoid some of that, and small group and individual, as you mentioned. So there's definitely a variation by case size, and that's partly the reason.
Just to repeat the question, what are some of the other specific reasons other than just general cost of living for the regional variations in cost of delivering care?
As I mentioned, that, you know, just the general cost, you know, land costs and so forth are going to vary. Labor costs are certainly going to vary across the country, and the labor costs are not just only about variations in maybe the average consumer price for certain goods and services. There's going to be more or less nurses in a particular area. That's going to drive up or drive down the cost. There's going to be, as I mentioned, a certain prevalence of using certain types of resources. I mentioned, you know, MRI, you know, certain imaging centers. The amount of centers has an effect on the amount of resource usage of that particular type of machine. There's going to be practice pattern differences. You know, the doctors in New York may practice medicine slightly different. You know, they may order tests to a greater or lesser degree, certain types of tests, than maybe out in Seattle, you know, are two kind of endpoints in our study. So those are some of the main drivers that affect the variation.
Can I follow up on that? If I thought we maintain the policy implications of that might be, especially for the president's proposal on this standard tax deduction for healthcare. I mean, for one thing, it looks as if the White House sort of got its numbers right. It's a deduction of $60,000 or something like that for a family. Anything above that would be taxed as income. So that is, it turns out that is what
it's close to.
What are the implications for the geographical cost differences on a global level?
Certainly. The question was regarding the implications of geographic differences on the administration's proposal that includes a fixed tax deduction for health care. And under the current tax structure, employees are, as a tax deductible benefit, have the entire cost of their insurance coverage. And employees with the most expensive coverage are realizing the greatest tax benefit from that, and vice versa. But there are a number of reasons that the expense of coverage differs from individual to individual. And some of the reasons that have been discussed have to do with richness of the benefit plan, as well as demographics or health status of the individual that, or group that is covered. And we're identifying here another difference in cost, which is due to where you live. And under the administration's proposal, that would be replaced with a fixed tax deduction that would be the same for everyone. So that would be a shift. There would still be differences in cost, but the deduction would be the same for all employees.
So for the same benefit, some areas will be fully tax deductible and others may not have the entire benefit deductible.
So in other words, people in their city actually have, I mean, the deduction isn't going to be nearly as much to them as it will to people in Montana.
Well, the tax deduction would be the same as it is proposed right now. There's still details, I think, to be worked out. But right now, on average, employees in New York have a higher tax deduction under the current program than in Seattle, the lowest of our selected sample cities.
And our selected sample cities, you know, does not cover the low to high range of, you mentioned Montana. We picked major metropolitan areas, which tend to be higher than rural areas, so the full variation may be greater, but, you know, we picked some that would be of interest. Yes?
So the cost sharing, I know over the last few years, the insurers have implemented a lot of different ways to do new types of cost sharing, like going from co-payments to co-insurance or tiers, pricing levels. What are some of the types of things that they've been doing over the last year? Have there been a lot of changes in kind of the way they've been doing some of the cost sharing that adds to the increase in cost for the employees?
Well, we have seen some shifts over this past year. We have seen, for example, that plans are tending to move away from fixed co-payments for pharmacy care towards co-insurance, usually on a tiered basis as well. And we see about 20% of all plans, according to our research, have made that shift. Another change that we have seen is that plans may have a higher copayment for specialist physician visits than for primary care physician visits. So those are some of the trends that we've seen.
Additionally, you know, some of the consumer-driven plans are moving from to relatively high deductible, calendar year deductible, in combination with contribution to an account. The PPO that we modeled here is a relatively lower deductible. We're at 260, and these high deductible plans will start at about $1,000 and go up from there.
Is the first question you just said that, Lorraine, you said that they're moving away from fixed co-insurance to more shared pharmacy payments?
For pharmacy benefits, that previously we saw more plans that had a fixed copayment for generic brand name and off-formulary drugs. Now it may be a co-insurance amount for each of those tiers. So a co-insurance would be a percent of whatever the actual dollar cost is rather than a fixed dollar amount per prescription.
Question from outside the room. The growth of the consumer-driven plans, has this been a factor, and is this growth what everybody thought it was going to be?
On a percentage basis, it's increasing, but from a small base. So as in anything, it's growing quickly year over year on a percentage. It still hasn't gotten to be a significant portion of the employee benefit. And it's starting with the larger employers, but with the HSA, it's starting to become more popular as you move down the employer spectrum. So.
Yes, sir.
Going over to the NMI, annual increase in medical spending, employee share. Sorry, I didn't mention this patient. At the 0607, there was a shift to where the employee share was larger than the employer share, and that was against what was the norm in the previous years. So 506, 405, to what do you attribute that flip, and do you think we'll see
Yes, just to repeat the question for those on the telephone line, the question was regarding the shift in pattern from what we saw during the period of 2003 to 2005, where employers were bearing the larger share of the cost increase, to a reversal of that in the most recent year, where the employee picked up a larger share. And what we think is happening there, because while trends are increasing at, or costs are increasing at pretty much a continual pace, employers are only typically about once a year, sometimes even less often, looking at updates to their benefit plan. And as they're considering the expected increase in healthcare costs, their corporate budgets, and the role of healthcare benefits in attracting and maintaining workforce, that when trends are high or are increasing, they often are hesitant to both project out and pass through the same kind of percent increases to employees and still keep an attractive plan. So we saw during the period of 2003 to 2005 that they were lagging behind those increases a little bit with any changes to their benefit plans, either in out-of-pocket cost sharing or payroll deductions to share in insurance. Now, a lot of companies have a target that for where the portion of healthcare costs they want to provide for their employees and the portion that they'd like employees to share, where they think that puts them in the labor market. And so there's a lag and a catch-up on that. And particularly in a year when trends are coming down, the employer is picking up the difference, and we think there's just a catch-up on that. And it's important to note it's still not at the percent cost sharing that it was in 2003. It's some catch-up this year. Remains to be seen if there may be some the next year, but it's just the cycle of benefit planning.
There are a lot of proposals beyond the president. There are proposals flying around in Congress. Is there any dimension of this study that would sort of suggest one approach is better than another? I mean, is there anything you can glean from the numbers that would say, that would give us insight about universal care proposals or more targeted initiatives? That was a broad question, but I mean, is there anything that, how can we guide Congress?
Well, the question to repeat for those on the telephone line is whether the Milliman Medical Index gives any indication of attractiveness of one healthcare reform proposal over another. And the index in its surge year is intended to measure the current cost in the current environment and on a consistent basis the trend in those costs. It's outside the scope of this study to project how those costs would change under any particular reform proposal.
Yeah, the last couple of years have had some fairly significant drugs go off patent, and the generic, you know, the ability to, you know, get those as generic has depressed the pharmacy trend, and probably will as into 2008. But you know, those were some pretty big drugs. I think Lipitor will go off in a couple of more years. There might be another major drug there, but the specialty and injectables are going to start to replace that. So we're not projecting further decrease. We're not projecting an increase back into the teens like it was a couple of years ago either. I think the main point is we didn't want you to imply from the fact that it's gone down a couple of years in a row that it will necessarily continue to go down, because there are some events that are that have happened that, you know, are somewhat unique to right now.
Any other questions from down the line on WebEx?